This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. 30 years ago, there were 29 abortion clinics in the state of Missouri. Today, there is only one. And that one came close to shutting down in 2020.
Just in the last hour, a ruling that the Planned Parenthood facility in St. Louis will remain open. That new information coming this morning as a state government administrator decided that the health department was wrong not to renew the license of this facility. The facility in St. Louis is the only place a woman could get an abortion in the entire state of Missouri.
Abortions are legal in Missouri up to 22 weeks gestation, but that was almost reduced down to 8 weeks back in 2019.
Legislators in Missouri overwhelmingly passed a sweeping law Friday, placing new restrictions on doctors who perform abortions. The law bans the procedure after 8 weeks of pregnancy, with no exceptions for rape or incest. Doctors could face up to 15 years in prison for performing an abortion.
The law was overturned in federal court, so abortions until 22 weeks remain legal in the state. Nevertheless, Missouri already has some of the most restrictive laws on abortion access in the country. There are few abortions performed in the state, very few, in fact. According to the preliminary data from the Missouri Department of Health, last year that one remaining clinic in St. Louis provided only about 10 to 20 abortions per month. But meanwhile, right across the border in Illinois, thousands of Missouri residents are receiving abortion care. So this year, Missouri lawmakers are pushing to ban access to out-of-state abortions.
The proposed bill in Missouri could punish anyone involved in a woman's abortion across state lines, whether you helped pay, referred them, or even drove them to the clinic.
KSHB 41 News reporter.
The Missouri proposal uses the same, quote, bounty hunter strategy that was behind Texas's landmark abortion restrictions passed last September. And it's just one of a slate of proposals coming out of Missouri that provide a clear indication of the direction some states intend to move in, should Roe v. Wade be struck down at the Supreme Court. So this hour, we're going to take a close look at what's happening in Missouri. And joining us now is Tessa Weinberg. She's with the Missouri Independent. She's been covering this issue deeply. Tessa, welcome to On Point.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first of all, let's just briefly talk about the bills that are under consideration right now. Tell us a little bit more about the amendment that everyone's focusing on regarding trying to deter women to seek out-of-state abortions in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this has been an amendment posed by Representative Mary Elizabeth Coleman, a Republican lawmaker from Arnold, Missouri, and like the intro stated, it states that it would be, you know, unlawful for an abortion to be performed or to even assist a Missourian from getting an abortion, regardless of where the abortion is ultimately performed. And, you know, Missouri, there are very few abortions happening in state. We currently only have one remaining clinic, Planned Parenthood affiliate in St. Louis, where you can go seek an abortion. So I think it's safe to say that many of the abortions that do occur for Missouri residents are happening across state lines. Many residents will go to neighboring Kansas or Illinois in order to seek an abortion. Missouri also has different provisions that require you receive counseling ahead of getting your abortion, and you know, you have to have a 72-hour waiting period. So there are various restrictions here in Missouri, which make it sometimes easier for people to just simply go out of state. And so the amendment really aims to try to tackle that, especially I think as we look ahead to maybe what will happen at a national level, what will happen with Roe v. Wade. And the bill also, you know, provides us examples of, you know, providing transportation to someone to access an abortion, or even if you're hosting a website that a Missourian could access that would help facilitate them to get one. And it also would declare abortion-inducing drugs as contraband as well.
Right. So to be clear, this amendment would allow private citizens to essentially bring civil suits against people, you know, quote unquote, aiding and abetting a woman seeking an out-of-state abortion. But it's not the state that would be bringing the lawsuit. But in that case, it's exactly like the Texas's SB 8. Is that right?
Yeah, it's similar to Texas's law, where this would be, enforcement through lawsuits that, would not be enforcement by the state or the state health department really making sure this law gets enforced. It would be through litigation.
Okay. So we're going to talk more about that bill a little bit later, or the amendment, I should say, a little bit later. And we'll also hear from Representative Mary Elizabeth Coleman, who is sponsoring the amendment. But it's just one of several proposals that the Missouri legislature, is considering that right now. Tell us about some of the others.
One of the, I would say the proposals that have maybe gone further so far through the process this year in the legislature are part of, a years-long effort by lawmakers to restrict public funds from going to abortion providers and their affiliates. And in Missouri, that really means Planned Parenthood, since that's the last remaining facility and provider we have offering abortions right now. And that kind of follows from the Supreme Court here in Missouri had ruled and struck down language in a 2018 budget bill that tried to, bar public funds from going to abortion providers. They struck that down and, described it as a naked attempt to legislate through a budget bill. So since then, lawmakers have continued to, try to restrict funding. And we saw already so far this session, lawmakers passed a supplemental budget bill that not only restricted, Medicaid reimbursements to Planned Parenthood, basically abortion providers and their affiliates, but it had kind of a new tactic of technically, providing a line item of funding, but sending that line item at $0. Uh-huh. And that is kind of a new tactic that, anti-abortion advocates said that they hope would withstand a court challenge this time. And there's standalone bills that still try to, restrict public funds through statute. One of the top senators who chairs the Appropriations Committee said he hopes to, intends to put similar language within the fiscal year 2023 budget bill. So those have, on a broader scale, been, I think, some of the long-term efforts that we are seeing, cross the finish line in the session this year. And yeah. I'll note, too, that with the language included in the supplemental budget, Planned Parenthood has sued over that. The Department of Social Services here in Missouri oversees MoHealthNet, which is Missouri's Medicaid program, and Planned Parenthood affiliates in Missouri had already received notices letting them know that their claims for Medicaid reimbursement were, not going to be processed. Mm-hmm. The department pointed to that supplemental budget bill saying, because of the language in that bill, we don't have appropriation authority. And so Planned Parenthood is suing over that, saying that they will be, unlawfully withholding those funds and, booting them from the Medicaid program.
A point well taken. So while a lot of the headlines have been focused on the bills that would seek to materially limit access to abortions, you're saying that the bigger long-term threat to the remaining abortion provider in Missouri might be through these funding issues. So we'll come back to that in a second, Tessa. But I just do want to dig in a little bit to some of the other bills, because there's been a lot of focus in Missouri on medication that's used to provide abortions, especially an early term abortion. So there's one in particular, House Bill 2810, which was originally written to make it a Class A or B felony to participate in the manufacture, sale, or transfer of abortion-inducing equipment or drugs. Now, the bill was sponsored by State Rep. Brian Seitz, Republican of Branson, Missouri. And earlier this month, Democratic State Rep. Wes Rogers questioned Seitz about exactly how much he knew regarding the details of his bill.
Do you know the range of punishment for a Class B felony?
No, I do not.
It's minimum of 5 years in prison, maximum of 15.
Okay.
Do you know the range of punishment for a Class A felony?
No, I do not.
It's a minimum of 10 years in prison to a maximum of 30 years in prison or life. So you're talking severe penalties here.
It's a very serious issue when we're talking about what I would consider the murder of an infant in the womb and the possible harm and possibly even causage of death. If they're using these drugs and these in an illegal manner, it could actually kill the woman. And I think that penalty is probably not even strict enough.
Again, that's Democratic State Rep. Wes Rogers questioning Representative Brian Seitz. Now, Rogers went on to offer Seitz a possible scenario. Would Seitz think it's appropriate For example, to sentence an 18-year-old woman who brought an abortion-inducing pill to her 18-year-old friend who just found out she was pregnant. But Seitz said he wouldn't engage in hypotheticals.
That's not an imaginary scenario.
I'm saying
there's going to be a prosecutor in the state who's going to have a woman who's 10 weeks and 1 minute pregnant, whose friend went and brought her abortion pills, and he's going to have to decide whether or not to seek up to life in prison for that. And I'm just making sure that's what you want, because that's what your bill does.
I don't know that prosecutor, and I don't know the circumstances of the case.
So what do you think would be a fair punishment for this lady? Or I'm going to call her a child because she's 18. What's a fair punishment for this child?
I think those that induce an abortion on another person in violation of any state or federal law ought to be held accountable for that activity.
How many years in prison?
I couldn't say what the statute is there.
Well, you can. It's 10 years to life. You wrote the statute.
If I wanted to be a prosecutor, I would have ran for that. My son is an attorney. He could do that. But at this time, I am a, quote, politician. So I'll let those with a different skill set determine that.
That's Republican State Representative Brian Seitz being questioned by Democratic State Representative Wes Rogers earlier this month. Tessa Weinberg, we have about a minute before we have to take the first break here. It does seem as if Representative Seitz didn't fully actually understand what he himself was proposing. We can talk about that later. But I wanted to know sort of what is the mood in Missouri right now regarding this raft of legislation that lawmakers are considering. How are people responding to it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, on that bill in particular, it was brought up again this week in committee, and lawmakers did vote it out of committee, but they did notably remove many of those provisions that were, I think, causing concern and uproar. And for example, the provision that regarding ectopic pregnancies, that was taken out. And so it does seem to be that there was some, you know, early pushback on that proposal and that it's since been revised. And so it kind of will remain to be seen once it gets brought to the full House of, you know, how a majority of lawmakers feel.
Mm. Well, Tessa Weinberg with the Missouri Independent, stand by here for just a second. When we come back from the break, as I said, we'll be hearing from a Republican state representative in Missouri and also from Planned Parenthood as well. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're taking a close look at a whole slew of legislative proposals in the state of Missouri that would, if passed and made law, would further restrict abortion access in the state. And I'm joined today by Tessa Weinberg. She's a reporter at the Missouri Independent. She's with us from Columbia, Missouri. And now let's turn to State Representative Mary Elizabeth Coleman. She is a Republican state rep from Arnold and with us from Jefferson City, Missouri. Representative Coleman, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks.
I'm really glad you could join us today because you're the one who offered the amendment to a Missouri bill that is broadly described as would effectively make it legal for private citizens to bring lawsuits against anyone who aids or abets a woman from receiving an out-of-state abortion. That's the summary here. First of all, can you tell me why did you think this amendment was necessary for Missouri?
Sure. So our preliminary numbers in Missouri for last year show that our efforts to protect the unborn and moms in the state have really made Missouri almost the first post-Roe state. We had, according to our preliminary numbers for last year, about 103 abortions that took place in the state. Most of those were at hospitals under the Life of the Mother protection. There are very few abortions that are taking place at the Planned Parenthood Clinic in St. Louis. Instead, what's happening is when women are calling that Planned Parenthood in St. Louis, they're referring them to a mega clinic that was built on the border outside of in Illinois. My understanding is that clinic is wholly owned and operated by the same parent company that's running the Planned Parenthood clinic in St. Louis. And so over 10,000 Missouri moms have had abortions at that clinic since it opened in 2019. And so that means that Missouri has made really great strides in making abortion not just illegal, but unthinkable in the state. But unfortunately, there remains some key protections that need to be provided for Missouri residents who are working to go around the state laws to protect the unborn.
But if I understand correctly, though, I mean, abortion is in fact not completely illegal in Missouri, right? I mean, it's highly restricted. Go ahead.
So what's happened is that Planned Parenthood has decided, I think, in large part that because of the geographic nature of the state, you know, St. Louis is a river town. It's built right on the Mississippi River. And just across the river, 7 miles away, Illinois has abortion on demand with very few protections in place for the unborn or for their moms. Really none of the health and safety protections that the state of Missouri has had. And so I think what's happened is that Planned Parenthood has decided that it's just cheaper and easier to have people driven across the border than to continue to operate here in the state.
But I guess the point I was wanting to explore with you is that because abortion is, in fact, it's definitely restricted in Missouri and difficult to access, but it is not illegal prior to 22 weeks. These women are seeking services that are not illegal in Missouri, but they happen to be able to get them in Illinois. So they're not actually doing anything that's illegal, but what's the need for the amendment?
Well, so the need for the amendment is that women are not being protected from the really horrors of abortion that are taking place, and that Planned Parenthood, by operating, you know, they're sending drivers and a car to move people. They're advertising. There's billboards all across the state that are really meant to try to have get Missouri women out of the state, either into Kansas or into Illinois. And so if you believe that I do, that abortion is, just an absolute tragic loss, not just for women, but for the entire family and, of course, the life of the unborn, then you want to do everything you can to protect that, to protect those children.
It does seem to me, though, that even though it's not the state that's directly that would directly bring the lawsuits that your amendment would legalize, that it would be coming from private citizens, that the overall effect is to limit a woman's freedom of movement in and out of Missouri. Do you have concerns about that?
No, and I would push back and say that that's absolutely not true. States have a broad ability to regulate certain types of speech and very limited ability for other types of speech. So commercial speech is one of those areas, and that's what really this bill is aimed at, and where we would have the most latitude in regulating that kind of speech. That's very different than limiting a woman's movement and her ability to choose on her own to seek those services.
Okay, choose on her own. But then if she even accessed a website, right, that website would be essentially, or the server, the person who made that website would be open to a potential lawsuit.
So, but again, your question was about the woman and limiting her ability to, and that's absolutely untrue.
But the effect would be for women not to cross state lines to receive abortions, right?
The effect would be to limit the commercial speech that's taking place where people are trying to skirt the laws of the state to protect moms and babies.
Okay. Well, the reason why I'm asking is because you're right. Under the amendment, the specific effect would be to, quote unquote, curtail that speech. But it would produce an outcome. That's what you said you were hoping for, of women not getting abortions, right? So the reason why I'm pressing this point is, Representative Coleman, as you know better than anyone, there are people who have said, look, the last time we effectively had a series of laws, whether directly or indirectly, that produced, made it more difficult for people to move around who are not actually criminals, was, you know, the Fugitive Slave Act was under slavery. your response to that?
I just think that it's really preposterous to think that you could be born in the state of Missouri or be conceived in the state of Missouri and have protections for your life that don't exist in Illinois. And when we start to value humans and people differently based on immutable characteristics, in this case, their age, and the legal protections that are afforded to them, that the argument that you're making is really one that the pro-life movement has been making for the last 50 years, that this is that level of severity, and that to say a person's value in this country is going to be different based on where they physically are is really preposterous.
Mm. How would the law be enforced if it's up to private citizens to bring the lawsuits that would be they'd be able to do?
Sure. So it creates a civil cause of action. So just like if a Missourian is harmed by any other product or procedure or event that takes place, the state of Missouri affords our citizens the ability to bring suit against those people in the state where that person lives. It would similarly create a civil cause of action here in the state. And that woman could bring a cause of action for a harm that was a result of the abortion, or someone else could bring a lawsuit if someone aided and abetted that abortion procedure from taking place. We have some really good precedent that has been some guidelines that we've been able to see because of how quickly the Texas law has been challenged and how fast there has been feedback from the Supreme Court on the parameters of that law and where it looks like it needs to be drafted in a tighter manner. And so it's looking at that Texas-style enforcement to bring a cause of action for Missouri citizens. So if I know, for example, the Hope Clinic, which is a clinic that operates just on the other side of the river, it's an independent health clinic that has billboards, and I see those billboards, then I, as a Missourian, could sue the Hope Clinic for violation of this law by putting up those billboards.
And just two more quick questions, Representative, if I may. So
sure.
you also practice law at the Thomas More Society, right? It's a not-for-profit law organization that focuses on restoring respect in law for life, family, and religious liberty. I wonder if, should your amendment become law, would you plan to take on lawsuits through the Thomas More Society, or would the society itself plan on taking on such lawsuits?
Well, so I would tell you that I don't shop for plaintiffs. Those plaintiffs, I would not be a plaintiff in this lawsuit. And frankly, because of my legislative duties, I don't know that I would be taking on additional cases at this time. And I haven't spoken to my firm about whether these would be cases that we would take on. My guess is no. I mean, I think what we saw in Texas is that there was this idea, and what we heard in the narrative was that there would be, kind of vigilanteism that would happen if these laws were passed. But the truth is that law itself is a deterrent, and that most American citizens have respect for the law and want to follow the law. And so I think that having the law in place is likely enough to ensure compliance with the law, and you won't see these types of things that we have not seen for the last 6 months in Texas that were predicted.
Mm. And last question, because I know I have to let you go, Representative, about using private citizen lawsuits to deter behavior, essentially, just as you said. Do you worry that now the precedent has been set so that we may see laws, say, in other states or even Missouri that go far beyond abortion, that, perhaps we would use, quote unquote, bounty hunter laws to prevent people from purchasing firearms in other states or things like that?
Well, so these provisions are very, very old. They're called Key Tem provisions. And although it's new to see them applied in the context of abortion law under the Texas bill that was passed, it isn't a new provision or a new idea in American law. We've been using it for a long time in things like Medicaid fraud, even goes back to the Revolutionary War time. So this is not a new, a new idea. Private enforcement of activity for which it's hard for the state to tell if it's being complied with has been a long part of our jurisprudence. And so, again, although this isn't a new area, I don't think that it's going to be something that is as problematic as it is being reported on. And in part because the ideas that people are pushing back on, for example, the Second Amendment rights, those are enumerated rights that are within our Constitution. The right to abortion can't be found in our Constitution. It was incorrectly created by a bad case in the Supreme Court. And so, you know, I think that, is it possible that somebody might try something like this in an illegal manner? I think that's possible, but I don't have any confidence that that would be successful when challenged.
Well, Mary Elizabeth Coleman, Republican state rep from Arnold, Missouri, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's turn now to Dr. Colleen McNicholas. She's with us from St. Louis. She's chief medical officer of Planned Parenthood in the St. Louis region and in Southwest Missouri. Dr. McNicholas, welcome to you.
So great to be with you, Meghna.
So first of all, you've heard the whole show thus far. Just respond immediately to what Representative Coleman said, that she staunchly disagrees that her amendment would produce any limitation on a woman's freedom of movement in Missouri.
You know, I don't think you need me to tell you or your listeners that it's just outrageous. You know, let's be clear that we know that no legislator can govern outside of its state lines. But we also know that these specific tactics are intended to create fear and stigma and concern, not just among abortion providers, but amongst people seeking abortion and those who care for them. You know, I really wonder if Representative Coleman is thinking about the pastor who's counseling a woman about her decision to have an abortion, the parent who brings their child to the clinic for care, or partners who accompany people who need abortion. You know, I wonder if she, as you asked her, I wonder if she's going to be sitting outside of our clinic in Illinois writing down those Missouri license plates. It's just outrageous to think that this kind of bill, this kind of law regulation wouldn't have an incredibly chilling effect, not just on our patients, but also on those who support them.
Well, in fact, she was fairly explicit in saying that's the effect that's desired through the amendment.
You know, I think she tried to talk a little bit around that, but to the point you made pretty clearly, you know, abortion is legal. It's legal in Missouri. It's legal in Illinois. And that may change come June, but that won't change the fact that Missouri will still be unable to legislate outside of its borders. And people should still be able to access that care where it is safe and legal. And we at Planned Parenthood will continue to provide that care so long as it is legal in Illinois. Mm.
Well, so there is a question. I suppose it's not entirely settled law of whether states can enforce laws beyond their state boundaries. I'm actually quite surprised that it's unclear. But given the way the law is written around civil lawsuits, there are some legal experts who say they're not quite sure. So we reached out to Mary Ziegler, professor at Florida State University College of Law. She's also a visiting professor of constitutional law at Harvard Law School.
Yeah, it's actually surprisingly unclear whether it's constitutional, in part because states have so rarely even thought about doing this sort of thing, especially in recent years. So we don't have a lot of guidance from the U.S. Supreme Court about this. We don't even have a lot of guidance about when state laws conflict, right? So if someone travels to a state where something is legal and then is going to be criminally punished for it when they return home, for example, we don't even have a lot of guidance from the U.S. Supreme Court about which state's law applies in that situation. And so I think we're going to be in for a lot of uncertainty when it comes to exactly how much the courts are going to protect constitutional rights in this space.
Dr. McNicholas, let me ask you, when Professor Ziegler says there isn't a lot of guidance about it because states have so rarely even thought of doing something like this, what does that tell you about even the totality of the legislative proposals in Missouri right now?
You know, you headed off the whole segment by talking about how extreme Missouri has been for so long. And the truth is that we have been living with the most extreme, the most unthinkable, the so rarely thought about or even conceivable kinds of legislation and restrictions. You know, what used to be thought as the most extreme could never pass bills are things that we in Missouri as healthcare providers have been operating under for years. You know, I think this bill, this amendment, as well as some of the others you talked about earlier today, House Bill 2810, really show a complete disregard for science, zero interest in understanding the full impact of their work, and really a reaffirmation of what ordinary people have become painfully aware of, and that is that the job of governance has really become more of one that is theatrical performance and not actually intended to think about how it impacts the people who live in the state.
Mm. We have 30 seconds before we have to take a quick break here. And I just, for the sake of clarity, Dr. McNicholas, do you think other people have made the analogy to the Fugitive Slave Act and the limitation of freedom of movement? Is that a comparison too far in this case?
You know, I think it's a really important observation. People of color and women who are disproportionately forced to rely on racist and discriminatory systems are the same people who rely on the network and safety support systems to access abortion. These are the people who are using abortion funds, practical support groups, in our own regional logistics center. So I think that the observation is incredibly important, and we need to think really carefully about that.
Well, Dr. Colleen McNicholas, stand by here. And Tessa Weinberg, you've been listening very patiently. I haven't forgotten that you're there in Columbia. We'll talk a lot more when we come back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're taking a close look at a whole slate of legislative proposals in the state of Missouri that would further restrict access to abortions in that state. And as a Republican state rep from Missouri just said on our own program, she already considers Missouri a post-Roe state. So what example is Missouri giving to other states across the country? That's what we're taking a look at this hour. Dr. Colleen McNicholas joins us. She's chief medical officer of Planned Parenthood in the St. Louis region. Tessa Weinberg is also with us. She's a reporter at the Missouri Independent who's been covering this very carefully for quite some time. And Tessa, thank you so much for your patience in that last segment, listening along. I'm just wondering, through your reporter's eye, what did you hear that helps us further understand the direction Missouri might be going in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a really, this is a novel approach. And I think it is in this context of, what would a post-Roe v. Wade world look like? And I think that's where we're seeing, new approaches and tactics by lawmakers to try to look ahead to that. Similarly, in addition to Representative Mary Elizabeth Coleman's amendment, there are a few bills proposed this session regarding making clear that there is not a right to abortion in Missouri's constitution. And I think that's really kind of in wake of what we've seen happen in other states. For example, in neighboring Kansas, the Kansas Supreme Court ruled that there was a right to abortion in Kansas's constitution. Lawmakers there have put a constitutional amendment on the ballot to undo that ruling and amend their constitution. And so I think that's just another example of how lawmakers are looking ahead and noted that if Roe v. Wade were to be overturned, that they want to make sure that they have things in place to combat that.
So we really want to sort of springboard off your reporting, Tessa, here, and just take a real close look at exactly what these laws are proposing, the specific even language of the laws, because people ought to know what's happening in their state houses. So Tessa and Dr. Colleen McNicholas, just hang on here for just a second, because we had mentioned a little earlier in the hour about ectopic pregnancies and medications used to treat ectopic pregnancies. Well, this legislative session, Republican State Representative Brian Seitz, you heard him a little bit earlier, introduced a bill to ban certain abortion-inducing medications. Now, this legislation initially proposed making it a Class A felony to administer, prescribe, produce, or ship in any way abortion-inducing devices or drugs if, among other things, quote, the abortion was performed, induced, or attempted to be performed or induced on a woman who has an ectopic pregnancy. Now, ectopic pregnancies are when a fetus implants and grows outside of the uterus, and those pregnancies are non-viable. The embryo will not survive. They're also a leading cause of maternal death in the first trimester. Well, this bill has been subject to vigorous debate. On March 9th, Democratic State Representative Carrie Ingle of Lee's Summit questioned Representative Seitz.
You stated, and it's not anywhere in your bill, but, you know, you stated that women can get treatment for an ectopic pregnancy.
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you know how the treatment for ectopic pregnancies work?
No, I do not.
You don't? Okay. Do you know that one of the medications that you're trying to outlaw is one of the main drugs given to unruptured ectopic pregnancies?
Right. Outlawed if used in an unlawful manner.
So therein is a question. And State Rep. Carrie Ingle asked Seitz precisely that question. What is, quote, an unlawful matter?
We're trying to stop unlawful use of these drugs and devices, not the lawful use. We want women to be safe.
So
what if an individual...
What is an illegal use of a drug on an ectopic pregnancy,
This
though?
Would be doing it outside of the hospital setting and outside of a doctor's care. If, say, for instance, a man was involved in keeping a certain amount of women under sex slavery and so forth, and maybe they were thought to have had, be pregnant or something like that, and yet they hadn't been to the doctor, that they would have the ability right now to purchase these drugs, even from out of the country, even, you know, online without going in person, and they could use these drugs to attempt to stop something that they don't even know what it is. They don't have the ultrasound machine. They don't have the hospital machinery to tell if this is an ectopic pregnancy. They might just think it's a normal pregnancy, and they want to abort that child. Okay. I would like to see that sort of unlawful activity stopped.
So that was an exchange on March 9th. This week, as Tessa Weinberg told us earlier in the show, Representative Seitz removed language around ectopic pregnancies from his bill. Again, that's House Bill 2810. But as we mentioned, ectopic pregnancies are severely dangerous for mothers. And we wanted to hear from a woman who has experienced an ectopic pregnancy. 41-year-old Rebecca Doe told us in 2009 she had an ectopic pregnancy and she almost died. Due to that ectopic pregnancy, her midwife had transferred her care to another physician. That doctor told Rebecca that what she had is what's known as a biochemical pregnancy, where, because of complications, the embryo is expected to naturally miscarry. So the doctor did not administer the medication that would have quickly ended her pregnancy. Rebecca happens to be an embryologist herself. And so she told us something just didn't feel right.
I kept testing myself because the physician said that it was biochemical, don't worry about it, it'll resolve on its own, and it was not resolving. So my values would go up and then crash, and then the next day they would spike up again, and it was kind of like a roller coaster pattern, which is absolutely not what should have been happening. And it took me until I was 9 weeks to convince him that there was something very wrong, and I was administered methotrexate, which is the drug administered for ectopic pregnancies, and told to go home and wait for my period to start. And within 12 hours, I had the most searing, stabbing pain I'd ever experienced. My husband found me on the floor, crying in pain, called the hospital. They rushed me there. I woke up the next morning and I had lost liters upon liters of blood and my left fallopian tube. And the fetus was measuring at approximately 8 weeks. term in my fallopian tube. So very large, and no one had taken me serious for 9 weeks. The only reason that I knew to advocate for myself was because of I'm a PhD candidate in embryology. That's why I knew to advocate for myself when something was wrong. The average woman would never have access to the resources that I had or know to advocate for themselves in the way I did. And I still ended up in the hospital losing so much blood, my fallopian tube, and almost my life. They're wanting to eliminate the option of medication. And from what I understand, any treatment of ectopic pregnancies would be essentially illegal. So even the more invasive treatment of a surgical excision of the ectopic pregnancy would be illegal. So the only option with the way these laws are worded is waiting until the fallopian tube ruptures. And then at that point, physicians will be legally allowed to perform life-saving measures. So are we going to put women in the hospital and just watch the clock and wait so we can catch it as it happens? Or are these women going to have to continue their daily lives knowing that they're essentially a ticking time bomb? I don't know what these lawmakers are thinking with the wording of these bills. These bills are essentially anti-life because they're wanting to put the mother's life at risk. And that's the only viable life in this situation. An ectopic pregnancy is not a choice between the fetus and the mother. There is no choice to be made. You have to save the mother's life because the fetus cannot become an independent being. How can you value life when you're not willing to save it?
Rebecca Doe. Now, she asked us not to use her real last name, given all the political sensitivities and pressures around abortion. Dr. Colleen McNicholas, let me turn back to you here, because, again, let's emphasize that this week, the specific language around providing medication to terminate ectopic pregnancies was removed from House Bill 2810. But other language remains, right? I'm seeing that it could become a Class A or B felony if those abortion-inducing medications were given to, quote, was induced or attempted to be performed or induced on a woman who's a victim of trafficking, as defined by Missouri law, or was done on a woman carrying an unborn child of more than 10 weeks gestational age. So overall, are you concerned about even the administering of these medications to women in any condition, that there is going to be a chilling effect if any part of the law passes?
Absolutely. You know, I continue to be embarrassed by the lack of scientific integrity that is coming out of the Missouri legislature. You know, to be clear, the medications, the instruments that we use for abortion, both medication and for procedural abortion, are the same medications we use for other gynecologic procedures and pregnancy-related care. There isn't a single medication that is only used for the narrow intention of elective abortion. And so it points out what has been true in bill after bill and regulation after regulation, which is that although the legislators, these extremist legislators, are targeting, they think, a specific procedure or a specific indication for a procedure, the implications have ripple effects across all of sexual and reproductive health care. And Rebecca's story is a great example of that, of one of those very, very examples, right? If we are unable to provide this medication for any indication, it will affect every indication in which it is appropriate.
Now, can I just, again, to be specific here, this particular House Bill 2810 would seek to make it a felony to deliver, distribute, manufacture, produce, prescribe, administer, dispense, import, export, et cetera, basically anything related to abortion-inducing devices or drugs. Now, one of them, and I forgive me if I say this incorrectly, is it Mifeprex?
Yes, mifepristone or Mifeprex.
Okay. Now, again, just to help us fully understand, that particular drug, for example, is also used to help a woman clear a natural miscarriage.
Absolutely. There are two medications we traditionally use for medication abortion, mifepristone and misoprostol. Both of those medications have indications for other reasons and other diagnoses in obstetrics. And you named the very most common one, which is natural miscarriage.
Of course, the legislators would say that prescribing that same drug for a natural miscarriage would remain totally legal in Missouri. But I hear your clear concern about the chilling effect or even reducing or making it more difficult to access those very drugs here. Now, we've got about 3 minutes left. And Tessa Weinberg, again, once again, I appreciate your patience here. Can you give us a preview, going back to the deeper point you made at the beginning of the show about perhaps the bigger concern that grabs fewer headlines is the funding measures that the Missouri State Legislature is considering. How likely do you think are those efforts to be successful in Missouri?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that has been, you know, a years long effort and something lawmakers, you know, have repeatedly wanted to do and continue to try to do. Last year, we saw that the renewal of the federal reimbursement allowance, which is an essential tax on hospitals and nursing homes and other providers that funds our Medicaid program, you know, there were some Republican lawmakers who wanted to attach language to the renewal of that tax that would similarly, you know, bar public funds from going to Planned Parenthood or abortion providers and their affiliates. And that was, you know, a really intense debate. Lawmakers were not successful in doing that in the regular session last year. There had to be a special session dedicated to renewing that tax. And ultimately, it was a unique kind of coming together of the women senators, both Republican and Democratic, who sat down and really discussed, my understanding is, their concerns and just what consequences would come of that. And eventually the FRA was renewed without that language. But we've seen, you know, renewed efforts by Republican lawmakers who want to make sure that what they see as their view of taxpayer dollars sort of kind of subsidizing or going towards what they view as the abortion industry or abortion providers, whereas reproductive health advocates have, you know, really made clear that this wouldn't just limit, you know, access to, it's not about limiting access to abortion, but reproductive health access more broadly. And I will note too, public funds, you know, largely and do not go to paying for abortions in Missouri. And so it has kind of gone towards this broader debate about funding more broadly and, you know, state funding or taxpayer funds of going towards Planned Parenthood. The state health department here in Missouri has also applied to oversee Title X funds, which are federal family planning dollars. And historically, those have been administered in Missouri by a nonprofit. And I know reproductive health advocates do have concerns that, you know, if the state were to oversee those funds, they are concerned that maybe certain types of providers would be limited from accessing it or that they would be kind of low on right. the list of getting those dollars. So, right.
Well, Tessa Weinberg, reporter at the Missouri Independent, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Dr. McNicholas, we have 45 seconds left. The framing of this hour is that, you know, Missouri has already positioned itself essentially, in the words of Representative Coleman, as a post-Roe state. How much do you see Missouri as setting an example for other states in the coming future?
You know, every state that has either recently or will be moving to protect abortion access needs to be paying attention to what happens in Missouri. What happens here doesn't stay here. And as you can see, Missouri legislature is poised to surveil their citizens no matter where they go across the country to get this basic, needed, and life-saving reproductive health care. So everybody needs to have eyes wide open here and do everything you can to protect access where you are.
Well, Dr. Colleen McNicholas, Chief Medical Officer of Planned Parenthood in the St. Louis region, thank you for your time today.
I appreciate the opportunity.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.